This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our reports on the preparations for the election of the successor of Pope Francis and other stories. That will be followed by Panorama. And then our feature, Justice and Peace. We shall close with this sports roundup. I am John Baptist Tumusime. The cardinals who have gathered in the Vatican in preparation for the conclave that would elect the successor of Pope Francis had their first meditation on Tuesday. The meditation was delivered by Bishop Donato Oriali, the abbot of the Benedictine monastery at St. Paul outside the walls in Rome. The meditation focused on the role of the Holy Spirit in the Church, whom Bishop Oriali described as the guide of the Church towards goodness and truth, who enables the Church to grow in spiritual maturity, who unites the faithful, and who gives them the various spiritual gifts. Bishop Oriali invited the cardinals to open themselves to the Holy Spirit before and during the conclave so that he can guide them in their choice of a pope who will lead the Church in its mission in the world in accordance with the will of God. Meanwhile, the Holy See has released the names of the cardinals who will take part in the election of the new pope. Lisa Zengarini reports.
The cardinals that will enter the Sistine Chapel on May the 7th hail from 71 different countries across the five continents. 108 of them were appointed by Pope Francis, while 22 were created by Benedict the 16th and 5 by St. John Paul II. During his 12 years of pontificate, Pope Francis significantly reshaped the College of Cardinals, making it a less Eurocentric and a more international body. For the first time, 12 nations will be represented by their own native cardinal electors. They include cardinals from Haiti, Cape Verde, the Central African Republic, Papua New Guinea, Malaysia, Sweden, Luxembourg, Timor-Leste, Singapore, Paraguay, South Sudan, and Serbia. However, Europe still carries a significant weight in the College of Cardinals. The Old Continent has presently 53 cardinal electors. 37 cardinal electors are from the Americas, 16 from North America, 4 from Central America, and 17 from South America. 23 cardinals are from Asia, 18 from Africa, and 4 from Oceania. I am Lisa Zengarini.
In a related development, the cardinals held their 6th General Congregation on Tuesday morning in the new Synod Hall. According to information provided by the Holy See Press Office, 183 of them were present and included 124 cardinal electors. Around 20 cardinals took the floor to speak. They addressed themes related to the Church and the challenges it faces, offering reflections shaped by the perspectives of their continents and regions of origin, as well as the Church's possible responses. The director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, told reporters that two cardinal electors will not attend the conclave due to health reasons. Meanwhile, Cardinal Giovanni Angelo Becciu, the former Deputy Secretary of State who was convicted by a Vatican court for financial mismanagement and nepotism, issued a statement on Tuesday saying he would not participate in the upcoming conclave, although he had previously insisted that he had a right to vote. Pope Francis had made him renounce the rights of a cardinal prior to the trial, and many cardinals had objected to his participation in the conclave. The College of Cardinals issued a statement on Monday expressing thanks to the delegations that were present at the funeral of Pope Francis, which was celebrated on Saturday, April 26th here in the Vatican. The cardinals mentioned in particular the heads of the churches and non-Catholic ecclesial communities who were present or sent their delegations, as well as the representatives of Judaism, Islam, and other religions, and the civil delegations, and those who led them, for example, sovereigns, princes, heads of state and government, ministers, and other government authorities. The statement said the presence of these delegations is particularly appreciated because of their participation in the grief of the Church and the Holy See. Their presence was a tribute to Pope Francis for his unceasing commitment in favor of faith, peace, and brotherhood among all the peoples of the earth. In a special way, the cardinals thanked the Italian authorities, the city of Rome, the security service, the civil protection, the media, and all workers, including the employees of the Holy See and of the Vatican City-State, who contributed with great commitment and generosity to the preparations for everything that was necessary for the various celebrations. Finally, the cardinals expressed gratitude to the thousands of adolescents and young people who participated in the Jubilee on Sunday, April 27th, who demonstrated the face of a church alive with the life of its risen Lord, and to all people of God who walk with hope towards the future. The Office of the Liturgical Celebrations of the Pope issued a note on Tuesday saying the cardinals who will elect the new pope will take the oath on Wednesday, May 7th at 15:30 GMT. They will gather first in the Pauline Chapel here in the Vatican and then proceed in procession to the Sistine Chapel where they will take the oath. After entering the Sistine Chapel, they will have no more communication with the outside world until after the election of the Pope. In the morning on May 7th, they will gather in St. Peter's Basilica at 9 hours GMT to celebrate the Holy Mass for the election of the Pope. The Mass will be presided over by the Dean of the College of Cardinals, His Eminence Giovanni Battista Re. Meanwhile, all the members of staff, both ecclesiastical and lay, who will be at the service of the cardinal electors in the Sistine Chapel, will take their oath on Monday, May 5th at 16:30 GMT in the Pauline Chapel. Each of them must be approved by the Chamberlain or Camerlengo, Cardinal Kevin Joseph Farrell, who is now the administrator of the Catholic Church. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
News Panorama.
At least 68 African migrants have been killed in a United States airstrike on a detention center in Houthi-controlled northwestern Yemen, the armed group's television channel says. Al Masira reported that another 47 migrants were injured, most of them critically, when the center in Sada province was bombed. The strike came hours after the United States Central Command announced the fact that its forces had hit more than 800 targets since President Donald Trump ordered an intensification of the air campaign against the Houthis on 15th March. The Houthi-run Interior Ministry condemned what it called the deliberate bombing of the facility and said it constituted a war crime. Security experts have said that attacks in Nigeria's northeast by Boko Haram and its splinter rival, ISWAP, has raised fears of a major comeback by jihadists whose tactics now include armed drones and explosive devices planted on major roads. At least 22 people are killed in weekend raids by militants in Adamawa and Borno states, while 26 others died on Monday after an explosive device ripped into two vehicles in Borno. Dozens more have been killed by a string of jihadist attacks since January. In Borno State, the heartland of the insurgency for over 15 years, Governor Babagana Zulum has warned that insurgents were making gains with little pushback from the military. Security experts attributed the resurgence to a lull in fighting between Boko Haram and Islamic West African province and the adoption of aerial technology by the groups. A United Nations panel of experts charged with monitoring sanctions in Sudan is investigating how mortar rounds exported from Bulgaria to the United Arab Emirates ended up in a supply convoy for rapid support forces militia fighters. This is according to a December 19 letter from Bulgaria's permanent mission at the United Nations. Mortar rounds seized from the convoy in November in Sudan's North Darfur region bore the same serial number as those Bulgaria told United Nations investigators it had exported to the United Arab Emirates in 2019. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni said on Tuesday that he had a productive meeting with the representatives of tech billionaire Elon Musk's Starlink, which is looking to establish a presence in the East African country. You are tuned to the Daily Africa service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. Reports from South Sudan say fighting continues between government forces and militias of the White Army in parts of Upper Nile State. Other parts of the country, including the capital Juba, are calm, but tension is high because of the uncertainty surrounding the continued detention of first Vice President Riek Machar. Mr. Machar was put under house arrest on 27th March this year on grounds that he and several other officials of his Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition party, who are also under detention, were inciting rebellion in the country. The government has launched an investigation into their activities and has indicated that Machar could be dismissed from his position if investigators find sufficient evidence of his involvement in the current fighting in Upper Nile State. The move to remove him from government and from his position as leader of his party is fiercely contested by the armed wing of his party, which remains loyal to him. President Salva Kiir, Riek Machar, and other leaders of South Sudan signed a peace agreement in 2018 to end a brutal civil war, but its implementation has stalled over key issues, including security reforms, election preparations, and drafting of a new constitution. Although the situation looks normal, the political uncertainty and the fear of the resumption of hostilities between Machar's army and government forces are affecting business, the confidence of citizens and investors, and the economy in general. Bishop Alex Lodiong Sakol is the ordinary of Yeyi Catholic Diocese, which is located in the southwest of South Sudan. He spoke to Vatican Radio about the current situation in the country.
There are still some pockets of attacks going on. Wherever there is the base of Dr. Riek Machar's army, is being targeted. The idea is to neutralize the forces that belong to Dr. Riek Machar. Around Juba, there are two areas.
Two areas where Machar has it.
Yes, it was bombed. And then they went to Eastern Equatoria. When they went to fight around a church, our own church, Catholic Church in the Diocese of Torit, they went and sought at random. The Bishop of Torit issued a press statement. One civilian was injured in that attack. Apparently, the person who was killed, the army, out of fear now that they are going to be discovered that they killed a civilian, they tried to hide the body. So there are still areas where there is attack here and there, even in Western Equatoria, because that's also another area of Riek Machar.
Very, very disappointing. Yeah. Now, every conflict, every fighting usually comes with the consequences. What are some of the visible effects have you seen in this ongoing fighting?
The first is, of course, displacement of civilians in those areas where that the bombing has happened or the fighting has happened. Many people in those areas are already displaced. Therefore, need humanitarian assistance. The country is in economic crisis. It's not so easy again for a population to be displaced in this tough moment of economic crisis in the country. That becomes stressing and depressing for the ordinary civilian who is struggling with life every day. Secondly, the whole country is intense and everybody is scared. There are even people who are already beginning to move on their own to the camps again in Uganda and others to Congo. There is economic crisis already. Our civil servants have never been paid for the last 1 year and 4 months.
How do they survive?
Hey, that's the thing, John Baptist. We even wonder whether that is there in the conscience of the government to begin seeing that they are civil servants, including the army. The only people who are paid are those in the upper class, but the other junior technocrats on the ground.
But is it because the economy is not performing well, or because there is corruption, money ends up in the pockets of big shots in government? What is the cause of all this lack of payment for civil servants?
I think first is corruption issue. The management of the resources of the country is not being done well. The resources of the nation ends up in the hands of very few people. And most of the time, these resources in terms of liquidity of money is actually spent outside. Many of our politicians have a lot of estates outside, a lot of property outside that they protect and they sustain. So much of the money goes outside for that. And number two, there is exorbitant expenses by these ministers and then vice presidents and all that. If you see the motorcades they use in the city, you begin to see that how much do they spend in a day. The vice president accompanied by five or more vehicles and expensive vehicles that causes a lot of fuel. You go to their offices there, you see a line of people, so many of them, I don't know what they do. These people have to be sustained. Even in their residences, you find a legion of people who stay there. And they have to take care of them all. How do you not get corrupted in this kind of situation? Their financial accountability is not seriously monitored. Now, of course, because of the war in Sudan, the oil extraction also has gone a little bit down because there is also fears of insecurity here and there. You know that our pipeline still passes through Sudan. Now, with the war that is going on there, the companies that are working in the oil fields are also getting scared. And so the activities have lowered down than before. And that means the revenue is not coming as it was before. That's the major revenue that runs the country. The agricultural products that we are supposed to be producing cannot be done in commercial sense because of the insecurity. People cannot produce much. And not much is invested on agriculture. Much is invested on security, on the army. We are already trading at the inflation rate of almost 400%.
That's too high. Eh?
It's too high, and prices have shot up. The ordinary person cannot manage it. One time last year, the government tried to subsidize by bringing some goods, but those goods, foodstuff, ends up with the top people instead of going to the last citizen of the nation. You see that people go through a lot of difficulties. Many families in Juba and other cities today survive on 1 meal. Then you go to hustle for tomorrow. The biggest number of people who bore the pain are the women. Those in the cities really hustle a lot. From morning, you can see that they go to the market, some greens here, I don't know what, go to the bush, bring charcoal, firewood, all these kind of things. In order that at the end of the day, when they come home, they bring some food for their children, at least to eat and sleep. Now, the population that is in exile, like in Uganda, in Congo, a number of them were already beginning to return. Because conditions in the camps are not so good, because the UNHCR has also reduced the ration of the food given to the refugees. We were hearing of 3.5 kilograms of beans or of grain, maize, given to you to eat for 1 month. Now, this is a person who is not employed. This is a person also who struggles to get land, because land is not given for them. You have to negotiate with the landlord, the chiefs, and they give you a piece of land. You also pay money for it. You struggle to produce something in a year, and once it is done, you have to pay another money and rent the land. Children are given education at the primary level by UNHCR and other NGOs, but when they finish, they have to go to secondary school. You have to pay for them. Where does the refugee get that money? So, again, situation in the refugee camps is also very dire. And this is a result because there was a little bit of calm in many of their places. Many of them were coming back. But now, with this tension, many of them are already deciding not to come. In fact, others are going back. Even returnees from Khartoum, Sudanese, who came from Khartoum, many of them, after reaching South Sudan, immediately they go to Uganda, to the camps, because they don't feel safe in South Sudan. They prefer to go from Khartoum direct to the camp. And it's still a long distance, and there again, things are not so easy. Sometimes when I sleep, I begin to ask questions in my head. Do our politicians know about all these things? It appears they don't know. Or if they know, they don't care about it. Me as a bishop, when I travel around in my diocese, in the bushes, I cross over to the refugee camps. You come to the town, you see the hustling of people on a daily basis. You begin to wonder, why are they subjected into this kind of situation? And of course, as a church, we have nothing much to offer. We rely on donations from outside, which is not so easy now these days again. We always cry that like the government really give an opportunity, a space for our people to develop. Our people are so good. They're hardworking. The land is fertile. They can produce. They can make South Sudan to be one of the best economies in the region if really there is a space created for them and security provided for them.
Bishop Alex Lodiong Sakol, the ordinary of Yei Catholic Diocese in Southeast Sudan. And that was Justice and Peace for this week.
This is a Sport Roundup and a welcome to the program in which we continue to pay tribute to the late Pope Francis, who loved and supported sports so much. My name is Kenyatta Godfrey Kampamba. While we continue to mourn and at the same time celebrate the legacy of Pope Francis of happy memory, we also realize the fact that expectation looms large, not just among the Catholic faithful, but in the entire world about who may be elected as the next Pope. This thought is reinforced by the recent announcement by the College of Cardinals that they have picked May 7th as the day when the conclave begins. As we look ahead to that exciting moment when the expectant faithful and pilgrims in St. Peter's Square exclaim and applaud with joy at the appearance of the white smoke that signals the election of a new pope, we also relive the events of 13th March 2013 when the conclave then elected the Argentine Jorge Mario Bergoglio to succeed Pope Benedict XVI, who had resigned on 20th February of that same year. Bergoglio chose Francis as his papal name in honor of St. Francis of Assisi. Among the first appointments of Pope Francis was the world of sports. Already in November of 2013, the Holy Father received an audience in the Clementine Hall at the Vatican, the head of the International Football Federation, FIFA, Sepp Blatter, and the president of the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach. Addressing these delegations, Pope Francis in his speech exhorted these sports leaders not to look for profit and victory at all costs. Doing so, he said, risked reducing athletes to mere trading material. The Pope went on to say that sport is harmony, but if money and success prevail as the aim, this harmony crumbles. He warned of the fact that the commercialization of sport may undermine its spiritual values. 11 years later, in 2024, Pope Francis echoed these same sentiments when he sent a message of greeting and encouragement to participants in the International Conference on Sports and Spirituality that took place in Rome from 16th to 18th May 2024. The event was organized and promoted by the Vatican's Dicastery for Culture and the French Embassy to the Holy See in view of the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris. Reflecting on the fact that we live in a world where sports play an increasingly central role in society, the Pope noted the fact that the discipline and temperance of athletes, as well as health competition, have often been valued as metaphors for virtuous Christian life. Even today, he continued, this metaphor can be effective for all those who, in some way, desire and strive to please God and be his friend. Pope Francis then quoted the Apostle Paul, who has severally compared spiritual life to athletic activity, and said that sports can be practiced not merely as a pastime, but as a vehicle for personal development and communal cohesion. As the Catholic Church and the world at large awaits the birth of a new pope, the sports world looks forward to a shepherd that will keep exhorting it about the important role occupied by the world of sports in society. From the Vatican, where we await the election of a new pope, we move to the United Kingdom, where on Sunday, Ethiopia's Tigist Assefa smashed the women-only world record by 26 seconds at the TCS London Marathon. She ran 2 hours 15 minutes and 50 seconds to win the World Athletics Platinum Label Road Race, finishing strongly to win by almost 3 minutes ahead of Jepkosgei, who touched the finish line in 2 hours, 18 minutes and 43 seconds. Olympic champion Sifan Hassan of the Netherlands was third in 2 hours, 18 minutes and 59 seconds. The men's race was won by Kenya's Sebastian Sawa in 2 hours, 2 minutes and 27 seconds, and this was the second fastest ever London marathon time. Uganda's world half marathon record holder Jacobo Kiplimo was second on his marathon debut, clocking 2 hours, 3 minutes and 37 seconds. Liberia has lost its appeal for a replay in its 2026 World Cup qualifier against Tunisia. The Lone Star were beaten 1-0 on March 19, 2025 at the Samuel Canyon Doe Sports Complex. Following the controversial defeat, the Liberian Football Association, backed by the Ministry of Youth and Sports, lodged a formal protest with FIFA, citing multiple questionable officiating decisions by Ivorian referee Clement Franklin Kipan. The Liberia Football Association argued that Kipan's handling of the match greatly impacted its outcome, particularly pointing to 3 denied penalty appeals. Despite weeks of review, FIFA has officially rejected Liberia's appeal, explaining that while officiating mistakes were evident, they did not warrant a replay of the match. The ruling stands in stark contrast to a similar case during the 2018 World Cup qualifiers, when FIFA ordered a replay of a match between South Africa and Senegal due to biased officiating. The decision followed the lifetime ban of Ghanaian referee Joseph Lamptey, who was found guilty of match manipulation. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.